from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
At 10:30, Ursula is going to take us on a trip down memory lane. What am I talking about? She's going to tell us about the first time that she did a TV story back in Eugene, Oregon, back in 1985.
Some of you weren't even born.
Where were you? Text in right now. What was you doing in 1985?
Well, there's a reason I'm going to talk about it, because right now, King County ranks near the top in the entire country of this one certain thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it happens to be something that I noticed in Eugene, Oregon, back in the 80s. There was a sudden explosion of this. Okay, it's a certain type of restaurant.
Some of my best friends.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So we'll talk about that coming up at 10:30.
Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to what's new at 10 o'clock.
What's new at 10?
And so you previewed it, G. Yeah. Is it time for Seattle to become a 24/7 city?
City
that is open for business and partying all the time. Wait, what?
I said yes. Next news story. Sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know what. Did you just take some cough medicine during the break? Are you okay?
No.
Okay. So the reason we're talking about this is because Downtown Seattle Association President and CEO John Scholes spoke with Seattle Magazine, and he thinks that Seattle is in line to become a 24/7 city. And he said, this is a quote, "I think we were at least an 18-hour city before the pandemic knocked us off our game. Great cities of the world are 24-hour cities, and Seattle's brand is more global today than it was 10 years ago, and we have the ingredients." Now,
yes,
I can already anticipate what people are going to say. Text us 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Do you want to see Seattle become a 24/7 city, a city that is alive at all hours of the day? And if so, what do you think needs to happen?
Yes.
Okay, so go ahead.
Yes. I want to see that. And I want you guys to remember, now, it was already, like my man John Scholes said, it's already an 18-hour city going, right? So essentially, things close technically 2 o'clock in the morning, doesn't open back up to about 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's already 18. That, Ursula, that 2 to 8, you're talking about another economy. You're talking about more workers. You're talking about more employment. You're talking about more travelers visiting here, right? If you in Wyoming, you like, hey, where I want to go on spring break? Yo, let's go to Seattle. Hear me. I've been telling you guys this. I've been telling you that Seattle is setting up to be a place of affluence.
I don't think everyone thinks that's a good thing. A place of affluence? Only a place for only the rich?
Look at New York City. Look at downtown. Look at Hollywood. Hollywood. I didn't say you should like it. I'm telling you what it's setting up as. I'm telling you when the median home price is $874,000. I'm telling you when rents are through the roof and people that don't have the money can't afford to live here.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we say words like affordable housing, and I say where? Anyways, back to the original topic, and I'll just kind of end it like this. This, in my opinion, is an indicator into where the future of Seattle is going. Look, I know you guys want to talk about, well, what about this? And this looks terrible. Go to any other city in the country. You think there's not awfulness in New York City? You think there's not awful streets in L.A.? There is awful streets or corners, but the city of Seattle, the summers are getting longer. It is a beautiful place to come to. When you come to this place, you find out, hold on, why y'all think I ain't left? I've been here 25 years. Mm-hmm. I came to this joint and I ain't leave.
Okay, hold it. So let's talk about what cities do you think of around the world, around the country and around the world? You mentioned New York, but what other cities do you think of when you say, okay, that's aspirational, 24/7. You want Seattle to be like what city?
I don't think I don't think Seattle would can be like any other city. I think New Orleans is 24/7, and it's dirty as hell down there. I think Las Vegas is driven by casinos. That's different. You're not. There's not going to be a whole bunch of casinos downtown Seattle.
So they were talking. So proponents of this whole idea think of cities like London and Tokyo and Buenos Aires, and they say, as far as why you want a city that never goes to sleep, it would help tourism, which you already talked about, being more inclusive of all types of workers. So people who work overnight shifts, et cetera, you know, they would have a place to go. I remember I used to work the 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. shift. Mm-hmm. I've also worked the 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. And yeah, it's like at 2 a.m. like, OK, I'm ready to. And this was in my 20s. I'm like, I'm ready to do something. Yeah. What is there?
Hospitality workers. There's a lot of people in restaurants, bars, etc., who would love this move. Not only can you pick up more shifts, potentially, you can earn a ton of money in those 2 to 6 or 2 to 8 shifts, but there's nowhere to go for a lot of folks after, you know, midnight, 12:30, when they get out of the restaurant and they go to the bar for an hour and start pounding shots and beers in an hour and then head home. I mean, I think it's a fantastic idea. We need infrastructure to support it. And if we do actually get to a point where we replace a lot of those empty downtown office buildings with people actually living there, that's how we get a lot closer to this. But I think if we're going to make a big push, you're going to also have a lot of people say, well, what about the crime? Well, because if you point to 24-hour cities, you know what nightlife brings? Nightlife brings crime, and nothing good happens after 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
Well, I think an argument can be made for that, and I think an argument can equally be made for if you have people populating these areas, and you, one of the things that I read in this article was there would be obviously additional police. Right now, we're not in a position. I mean, I read a Seattle Times editorial where, we've been talking about it too, that the process of trying to add officers to SPD has been very slow. Even with all of the money being thrown out there, it's slow. It's not, and it's just not just SPD. It's every police department. And to be able to do that, you need to be able to ensure that people are going to be safe and people feel safe. And right now, we're not there. We're getting better. I have seen the improvement, and I think anyone who actually works in downtown Seattle or lives in downtown Seattle has seen the improvement. But there's much more to do.
Chicago. Chef just nailed something. And so commercial real estate, you guys, we always talk about the cranes and all these buildings that are going up. But what we didn't foresee was this pandemic that happened, right? And so what's happened is a lot of companies aren't rushing to go into these buildings now. So it is going, some of these buildings, the whole work from home, folks are working from home. So what are you going to do? Now, I know a lot of folks think, well, what about affordable housing in those buildings? That's not going to happen. And I believe that we're going to see going forward, these buildings that you see downtown in Seattle, some of them will be workspaces, but some of folks, it was going to be living situations too.
Well, that's the mayor's plan? Mm-hmm. And that's part of the plan is to convert them. It's not an easy task, but to convert them into residential buildings.
This is why it matches with the 24/7, because we will see more. Because right now, I think I read in the report, there's 100,000 people living downtown Seattle. We are going to see that number grow. And when that number grows, add it with the 24/7, more money.
And again, the people who are really pushing this are people who have a vested interest, whether it's the politicians, whether it's the Downtown Seattle Association. But I want to hear from you. Do you think that would be a good move? You listening right now, text us 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Okay, Seattle is changing as a city. And so we should talk about the housing market. You mentioned the buzzword of affordable housing. But new multiple listing service data shows that the median single family home in King County sold for $910,000 in May. That's down 9% from last year. And in Seattle, prices fell by 12%. So during our morning meeting, Chef brought up that, you know who has really been buying a lot of the houses on the market over the past 5 years?
Who?
Millennials.
Hmm.
In our brains, though, we went to, I think when you hear millennial, you're like, oh.
Young people.
The young people are making big bucks.
How old are the millennials, Ursula? How old are they?
The chef.
You know, 40.
40 years old.
42.
Oh.
Middle aged.
Oh, you got a house now? Good job.
Yeah, I feel like my development, that of millennials, has been permanently stunted. Like, we'll be forever kids because stunted. so many of us have waited, you know, 10, 20 years, two decades to achieve the same life goals that prior generations were getting in their 20s. Want to get married? Okay, got married at 22. How about the house? 25. First kids? Oh, we got three by the age of 27. Meanwhile, folks at my age are like, yeah, I think maybe around 50, I'll be able to get a house. Got married at 30. Yeah, kids, had those about 33.
And you know what,
when
though?
When you think about having kids, bro?
Probably not. I mean, borderline, like mid-30s probably.
See?
Oh, I know.
So, like,
you know what?
At the most, 5 years from now.
So I had baby fever, grandbaby fever.
Yeah.
When baby George came and visited last weekend.
Uh-huh.
And so I sent a picture to both my boys, who are in relatively serious relationships. I sent a picture of me cuddling the baby to my oldest son.
What do you say?
Mom, I hate to disappoint you, but I am nowhere near ready for that. Maybe when I'm 32 or in my 30s. No. Like, he's 26 right now.
And
you know what? That's perfectly fine.
Yeah. These young whippersnappers today, they not feeling no kids.
Yeah, he's very career-driven right
now. Nick, why is it? Why are you and your friends? How come y'all ain't trying to have no kids, bro?
Because we're still trying to live our lives right now. It seems like at this point for me, like, the first step would be you want to, like, maybe be a homeowner, own some property, right, before you start bringing more people into the world. But before that, you want to enjoy life, maybe establish a relationship with somebody, you know? Like, feels like with the pandemic and, like, 2020 through 2022 or 23, like, everybody's, like, growth seemed to have gotten stunted, and like these last 3 years just felt like one, and it's like, where did my mid-20s go, you know?
The millennials are feeling stunted. Is that what we're
gathering
right
now? 5'5".
Gen Z and millennials.
Chef, I did not bring that word up.
Yeah, you did.
Well, you even think about, like, the college kids, like, they're getting, like, an extra year in athletic sports just because the schools feel like they missed out in those few years, you know?
You both are exactly right. I think that it put a lot of things on hold. Not to mention, you've talked about how expensive everything is. It takes longer to feel like you're established. So, yeah, there's nothing wrong with waiting.
These kids are just smarter than we were.
Don't dive in before you're ready.
They tried to say, we just want to live our lives. Bruh, you act like we weren't living our lives. We just didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. You know what I mean? We had kids and then, like, and found out later, like, oh, this is the cost of child care? Had no idea.
That and the price of a house ain't the price of a window. He's frosty anymore. Let's put it that way.
Okay, but I'm just going to give you a statistic in case you're, you know, having a conversation by the water cooler that doesn't exist. The number of millennial homeowners in Seattle has doubled in the past 5 years, with more than 128,000 middle-aged homebuyers, which I guess that's not breaking news. But, okay, let's talk about something really cool that happened.
Okay.
Did you hear about this rescue? After more than 24 hours, a 10-year-old girl who went missing in a very rugged area near Clay Ellum has been found.
It's a very surprising result. This was a terrifying call because the Clay Ellum River is a dangerous body of water. It's running fast and hard now with runoff from the Cascade Mountains. And the last place she was seen was playing around on logs in the river.
That is Chris Whitsett with the Kittitas County Sheriff's Office, who got really emotional while speaking to Deborah Horn from Cairo 7 TV.
We've got helicopters, drones, dogs, 4x4s, just amazing amounts of training and energy that have gone into this search. This is a total vindication of the drive to keep this a rescue, keep this kind of call a rescue as long as you possibly can.
So big kudos to all the people from that search team who worked tirelessly to find her. After spending a night in the wilderness, she was found about a mile and a half downstream from where her family was, and she just had a few scratches. So she was able to actually stay overnight by herself. Which I need to ask if you...
No, I ain't surviving.
Of the three of us...
Of the three of us, I'd be the one that's struggling. And
no, well, I'd be struggling.
No,
with
I'd
you.
Be struggling. And then they're going to say, the examiner, they'd be like, what happened to him? Well, he didn't die of being cold. He wasn't too hot. What happened?
He didn't have his Egyptian cotton thread sheets.
No, he stress. Stress got him. Well, what do you think the stress was? And then the FBI profiler would come in and be like, oh, it was the stress because he had no cell phone. You know what I mean? So it'd be like, it was real stress. No, being serious, I want to take this time to really give a real shout out to those that worked tirelessly to make sure that this young one was safe. They found her, and that is incredible. And Ursula, I just wonder what that was like, what that moment was like for them when they found him alive.
Well, just for him talking about it, he got really emotional, and I was moved. But he had described how it's not like they all just go out willy-nilly and go running out into the wilderness and try to find a missing person.
Yeah.
I mean, they basically, you know, create a grid and go step by step, and it's just really organized. And it's something that they do all the time, and so often they don't have this miraculous outcome like this one. So what a great story.
Real talk?
Yeah.
Be real hard for a lot of people to survive. It's a good reminder that no matter what, if you're out hiking, whatever, make sure you got a little emergency blanket in your backpack, some extra food and some water. And if you do get lost, stay in the same place.
Oh, such great advice.
So y'all can't make fun of me going camping no more.
Nah,
suitcase.
You're prepared.
I'm good.
That's just one of my favorite images, though.
You know what,
Glenn? Great advice, Chef. But that's just one of my favorite memories. You posting pictures of your camping experience.
How about Glenn and Duvall? Glenn and Duvall, I don't know where you and Duvall, but you're not right, Glenn. He died fighting a bear for his Louis Vuitton suitcase. Come on, Glenn. All right. I can't wait to hear this story next. We're going to find out Ursula's first TV news story that she did down in Eugene, Oregon. And we're talking about that because there is a particular increase in a lot of a certain type of restaurants in this area. So that's the connection there. We talk about that next. Gene Ursula.
G and Ursula's show, we were chuckling because G can never live down the fact that his big camping trip involved fancy luggage and really fancy sheets and pillows.
Did you see what Lance in Manchester said?
No, what did he write?
G Scott has been lost in the forest for an entire 3 hours. He starts to follow a river downstream because he remembers that they always lead to civilization. As he crosses a log, it rolls slightly and his wheeled luggage starts to float down the river. G screams out loud, oh my gosh! And his lighted spinning belt buckle is in there. People a mile away hear his screams and G is soon rescued.
So you'd be okay, according to Lance. Okay, let's talk about food. We're not quite close to lunchtime yet, but do you know what we have a lot of in King County?
What?
Asian restaurants. And you know how many? I mean, we're talking King County ranks near the top for the preponderance of Asian restaurants. This is according to Gene Balk at the Times, which, again, shout out to him. He always finds interesting things for us to talk about. And King County is one of just 8 U.S. counties where at least 25% of restaurants serve Asian foods. And this is according to new Pew research. You brought up that one of my very first TV stories. So I actually studied journalism at the University of Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I was going to go into TV.
Glad one of us went to school for it.
Clearly you don't have to. You're doing just fine.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ursula. Okay.
But the reason I bring that up is because we were all asked, hey, what story would you like to do as your first TV story?
Right.
And so I'm looking around, and one of the things that I noticed was that in Eugene, Oregon, suddenly Chinese restaurants were popping up everywhere.
1985.
This was about 1985.
Okay.
Yes, I know. A lot of people weren't even born, or they were little kids. But so I did a whole story, did my first stand-up in front of a China Garden.
Okay.
And now we're looking at King County, and living in King County, I feel so blessed that we have so many Asian restaurants. We have some really good restaurants.
Oh yes, it's the mecca here. Here, San Francisco, L.A. has a lot, but yeah, King County. You said 20 to 25% of the restaurants,
yes,
in King County are,
exactly,
Asian restaurants.
Yes,
so one out of four ish restaurants,
yes,
are Asian. I love it.
Well, one of the things that made me crack up was this morning you were talking about how what you used to consider
Do we really want to tell people this?
Well,
okay.
It used to just be Chinese American restaurants, right? Egg Foo Young and just some of the stereotypical restaurants, which I am so glad that we are beyond that.
Oh, well, since you guys like to laugh at me, my spinning belt buckles and my luggage and camping, all that. Okay, what I told them this morning is that when I was younger in Chicago, I thought all Asian food was Chinese food, period. Everything was Chinese food. And the only thing that I thought that was Chinese food was what we ordered. Like, it was shrimp fried rice,
chow mein,
egg rolls, and some chow mein. Those are so that's the only thing. So I thought that all Chinese food was that. So much so that I didn't even start to get even more educated about Asian culture and food and cuisine until I came out to the West Coast.
Yes.
And I was like, oh. And so I guess my point is that so much can be learned. Like the Midwest and the South and them, they need to get these cuisines out there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I want to bring Chef in here because, Chef, you have a lot of experience with restaurants, and I know that you keep track of a lot of restaurant trends. But have you noticed that Korean restaurants have seen an explosion in this region?
Absolutely.
It used to be teriyaki and Chinese food.
Teriyaki especially, but even in Snohomish County, the Korean restaurants up there, they have absolutely exploded. There's probably been 12 within about 5 miles of me that have opened within the last 5-6 years. There's one in Linwood that is fantastic. It's called Modu, M-O-D-O-O, up in Linwood off Highway 90, and is amazing. The food is outstanding. The service is spectacular. The people there are so nice. And what I love about Korean food is when you go into a Korean restaurant, you get the banchan. It is like the little condiments and dishes, like the kimchi, the pickled vegetables, etc. So you're never going to be eating like one or two things, like your burger and fries at a Western restaurant. You're going to be trying like 10, 12 different things at a Korean restaurant. And I guarantee 10 out of those 12 things you've never tried before in your life, and you're going to love at least half of them.
You know,
I want to hear from people about their recommendations. If you have a particular Asian restaurant that is your go-to. I have one just down the street. The son of a butcher. Korean barbecue place there.
Yeah.
Every time our boys come, we always have to go there. Fantastic. And it's like, it looks like a little strip mall.
Mm-hmm.
But the food in there is just delicious, and it's an experience. It's like it takes a while to go through all of it, and you get to cook right there on your own table.
My man, Jason and Pialop, just hit me up and said, Husumi out there on South Tacoma Way for the Korean spot, Korean barbecue. Oh, and by the way, yes, it took me marrying my wife to realize, you know, that, oh my goodness, I had no idea how good Korean food was. Like, you hear about it, and I'm like, no, no, thank you, no, thank you. Yo, Korean food is so good.
It is. And they're fried chicken. So you'll see just even in the Seattle's University District, all of a sudden it's become like little Koreatown because there are a whole bunch of Korean restaurants back to back. The other cuisine that has seen, I think, a big increase or a mini explosion maybe is Vietnamese.
Yeah, restaurant. Absolutely.
And then wasn't there, just on the James Beard list, wasn't there a family?
Yeah, it was the family that owns Pho Bok, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, that got nominated for an award.
Which is so great to see that some of these cuisines are being recognized.
By the way, speaking of Seattle as a 24-hour city, this would be like my 24-hour Seattle menu. On the weekend, dim sum at Jade Garden. And for breakfast, Chinese barbecue at Cow Cow for lunch. Hand-shaved noodles at Shanghai Garden for dinner. And then you got to wrap up the night at about 4 o'clock in the morning with the salt and pepper squid at Honey Court.
Oh, with the waitresses
going around with the vacuum cleaners, cleaning the floors around your feet.
Okay. We can't get out of this segment.
Honey Court.
No. Yo. If you're listening, you just heard Chef say that, and you just heard him say about Honey Court, downtown Seattle. Listen, if you've been there, then you know. If you haven't been there, and you want to end your Friday, Saturday night off with, like, hey, something good, instead of just going through that McDonald's drive-thru, go to Honey Court in the ID. Trust me on this. It will change your life. And I'm talking, and it stays open till like 4 in the morning, and it is so good. All right, good stuff, Chef. You got me excited. Get me out of my seat. Coming up next in scenarios, on Facebook, you know how when it's your birthday and you get a whole bunch of happy birthdays? What happens if you don't respond? Well, we'll talk about that next. Jen Ursula. Is everybody hungry after that segment?
Yes. So many people are texting in their recommendations. Cow Cow is getting a lot. Honey Court, a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. All right. Scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Ooh-wee. My birthday was a few days ago, and you know what birthdays are on Facebook. Everyone gets a reminder that it's your birthday, so everyone says, happy birthday. For years, I'd read every single one. I'd even count them to see how many I got, and I'd either like or respond to every single one of them. But over the last few years, I've been way less into Facebook at all. I didn't even bother to look at my page to see my birthday wishes. It was 2 weeks ago, and I still haven't looked. So here's the problem. A good friend of mine told me yesterday that she unfriended me and blocked me on all social media. She was hurt because I didn't have the decency to acknowledge her happy birthday message. I explained that I didn't read any of the messages, and I was pretty much done with Facebook. She said that was rude and not being a good friend, and if that's how I felt, I should delete my Facebook account. Wow. Why would I delete it? And why would she be so hurt that I didn't respond to a stupid birthday greeting on social media? 888-973-5476 is the State Roof and Text Line. Ursula, you up to bat first.
First of all, that's not a real friend who takes such great offense to the fact that you didn't respond to a happy birthday on Facebook. But I also understand that for some people, that is their only outlet. And I just disagree so wholeheartedly with people who try to control how you do your Facebook and what you do and will get on your case because you didn't respond immediately. I mean, it's to the point where I try to respond as much as possible on Facebook. And if someone says happy birthday, but it's gotten to the point if someone just says happy birthday, I'll just do a like on it or just show that I've seen it. But I'm not going to take the time to respond unless someone actually goes a little further than that, which you've got to pick and choose, right? And okay, for people who don't know right now, gee, you're suffering from your allergies, and I'm feeling for you.
So I'm
kind of getting distracted by the fact that you're. I know you're trying to hold in your sniffles, but someone can't tell you how to respond on Facebook. And if she, you know, blocked you and disconnected you and is now getting on your case about it, that wasn't a real friend. Right. But on that said, I would also just, you know, hey, I'm sorry you feel that way.
All right. Chef?
No, you're not missing out on anything. Unless, of course, maybe that was a desperate cry for attention and she has a little secret thing for you. But here's the deal. I mean, who lives like this still? I understand that, you know, middle school kids have Instagram drama, but what adult still is dealing with the type of Facebook crap that we were talking about in 2006?
They do exist.
I just can't believe it. Like, I actually had to turn the birthday notification on my Facebook off because it gave me more anxiety getting, like, you know, 20 messages from people that I haven't had the time to connect with over the last year. Happy birthday. How are you doing? And I'm like, crap, I didn't say hi to you on your birthday. I didn't text you back that one time. I was just like, I need to shut it off. You know, we're meant to have a limited number of social connections. And trying to spend all of your energy, like, pouring them into these tangential relationships that you have in your life, it's just exhausting.
See, now, I'm a little bit different from you on that end, Chef, because I actually think that's one of the beautiful things about social media and Facebook specifically, where it reminds you. So I love getting that reminder because I'm horrible. So I do love getting that reminder, and I do like to give some kind of greeting. And on my birthday, it does feel really good to be remembered by a bunch of people who say kind things and take that time to do that. And again, as much as I can, I will try to recognize that they took that effort. But if someone gets so worked up about what you didn't do in response to something that they posted on your page, it's like, come on.
Yeah. Okay. I think when it comes to Facebook, me personally, the reason why I have the career that I have today is because of Facebook. It's because of people that engaging with me help uplift me. This is why I always respond to listeners or anybody. I'm going to respond. You wish me happy birthday? Even if I don't have time to respond back, I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
Because everyone, see, that's what's interesting. Here, real quick, let's hear from Nick. Nick, we got something?
Go ahead. I think if you're true friends with someone, you tell them in person if you can, but I don't expect anyone to check their Facebook all the time. If you don't see the posts, so be it. But blocking the person, I think that's a little drastic, but I mean, I guess that's the purpose of friendship.
That's what friends are for.
I think we're getting a little petty here. It is the other person's birthday, after all. That's my take.
Yeah, this whole blocking and unfriending, I mean, that's a little drastic, right? But, you know, I've seen this happen. I've seen this happen with pro athletes all the time. And, I've talked about this with my son. I'm like, you know, when you're younger and before you were a famous or a known name, you communicated and you talked to people. But then you get to this quote-unquote status, and now you're too good to respond back. Mm-hmm. I never understand how that happens. Like, why not communicate that way then? Now, there's some people like Chef of the World, they just don't communicate with people, period, right? So that's cool, too, right?
Have a tight circle, I call it.
But for some reason, there's something about this story. This is what I really think happened. I think that when they responded, happy birthday, it was nothing. But somebody else they might know responded happy birthday, and they responded to that. Because sometimes people pick and choose who they respond to.
Yeah. Well, but sometimes just as a matter of time and how much time and when you're actually looking at your feed, again, I just wouldn't get so worked up if someone didn't respond the way you want to something you posted. I mean, and this has happened to me. It's like, let it go. Okay. Don't assume the worst.
But you know one thing that you and I got in common?
What's that?
We respond to people.
Yeah. I know, to the detriment of my sleep.
Right, we do. And I think the reason why I do is, like I said, I'm never going to forget the people on the way up. Hey, coming up next, Agree to Disagree, Gene Ursula.